sitting here with MLJ. ML, thanks for coming on. Another member of Team Best Dude off the checklist. How's it going, man?
Man, everything's great. I'm loving life right now. Still on vacation from my real person job, which any minute away from that building is basically a minute in heaven. So I'm very content.
So let's just get into that. You're back from WrestleMania 30. You were in New Orleans for how many days? 5 days?
I was there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah, I got in late Wednesday night. So, I mean, you can make it like 5.5, 6-ish, depending on how you want to look at it.
What all events were you at over the weekend?
On Thursday and Friday, I helped out Gabe and Sal and all the guys at the WWN Productions for Evolve, A Wrestling Odyssey, and Dragon Gate USA and Kaiju Big Battle, like directing traffic in the McAllister Auditorium at Tulane University, you know, kind of just showing people where they had to sit and this, that, and the other. It was mostly like open seating, but as far as what rows they were allowed to sit in and whatnot. So I did that Thursday and Friday. Saturday, I worked with Marty DeRosa at WrestleCon. I broadcasted the second half of the show, which was really cool for me because I got to, I was really looking forward to Steen and Tanaka, and I actually got to do commentary on that match. So, I mean, that was awesome, as well as like Hiro, Elgin, and Gulak, the three-way that they had, Colt Cabana, Jeff Jarrett, Eric Royal, Tommy Dreamer, a six-man tag that had Cassidy Riley, Luke Hawks, and Hurricane against Adam Pearce, Matt Stryker, and Steve Corino, and the main event, DJ Hyde and Masada. So I got to do those matches with Marty DeRosa. Really cool working with him. It was like kind of my first time formally meeting him, but I think we had a pretty good chemistry. And after that, my quote unquote work for the week was over. And Sunday and Monday, I did Mania and Raw respectively.
That sounds like one hell of a weekend to me.
Yeah, it was really cool. 'Cause like there were just so many good matches all week, and just being there to witness them, hang out with the boys during the shows afterwards. I mean, let me tell you what, like going to Bourbon Street with the boys is unlike any experience I think I've ever done. Like, it's just wild, man, because it is like a fraternity, you know, this wacky business we call pro wrestling. And then when you get a bunch of us in a place like Bourbon Street, freaking all bets are off. Like, it was a party. It was a good time. It was like the time of my life.
I'd be lying if I didn't see like stuff you were posting, Mikey King, Georgie Boy, all those guys, and I wasn't just insanely jealous of the fun weekend you guys had. But I'm glad you guys had an awesome time. Yeah. Just like crazy. Mikey King wanted to know if you would comment on a girl named Amber that you met this past weekend.
Oh, she is a entertainer that stole my heart.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. We went to this really dingy gentleman's club called Lipsticks, and that's of course not spelled with a CKS, it's spelled with two X's at the end. And we first walked in off of Bourbon Street, you know, because there was like this this promoter outside. Like all these clubs have like these guys that are working the streets as if they are carnival barkers, you know, like step right in, like, you know, buy one beer, get one free, or free cover, or, you know, whatever their gimmick is to get you in. This particular one was no cover. If you don't like it, you can just leave. Well, okay. Go to a strip club on a Thursday night without having to pay for it. Sweet. That's right up my alley. So we walk inside, and this place is immediately like one of the dirtier places I've been. Not dirt, like it wasn't like dirty, like but it was like kind of scummy. It was like skeezy, you know what I mean? It wasn't like upscale. Still right up my alley. So I go to the bathroom, and when I'm in the bathroom, I'm thinking to myself, man, this place looks like looks terrible. What are the rules for this show?
No rules. Say whatever the hell you want.
All right, so this place looks like shit. Like I don't know what the quality of girl is going to be like. So we might just have to freaking leave. So I come out of the bathroom and I'm like still mulling this over. We had been there for like a minute and a half at this point, and I'm about to pull the trigger with my boys and say we gotta go. But then along comes Miss Amber, and we got like she was by far the hottest chick in this club, and we kind of hit it off, and a lot of money was spent, and a very good time was had. So there's that.
What was so special about this girl?
I don't know. She was just like cool looking. Like she had a she was a very physically appealing female. And she was very kind. She was a very kind girl to talk to. We were the same age, and when we were like just like talking, it wasn't like your typical like stripper talk, which I know full and well. Like I know all the gimmicks that they do. Like they're workers, you know.
No, of course.
Like I know when they're working and when they're like legit. This girl's like pretty legit, and I was able to like get some like real life stuff out of her. So like that made it cool. But yeah, she was just like kind of like a cool girl that you would approach at like a regular bar, except I was able to she took her clothes off and stuff like at the place I met her, which you can't really do at a regular bar or else, you get thrown out. So
Now, you were like a big strip club guy, right?
love them.
So comparatively, if you're comparing what you, the place you went to in New Orleans to a place in like your South Philly, New Jersey area, how would they compare?
As far as like quality wise or
Just in general, just the quality of the girls there, the quality of the venues there, how they run things, everything.
all right, so at that particular place, we went there like I think 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, like we were there Thursday night, and then we came back Friday night with Stutzy and some of the CWF guys. Mikey King was there, Stutz with the rib of the weekend by just taking Amber away from me and like basically having her sit on his lap, cuckolding me like right in front of me, like 3 feet away. Like I mean, that was funny as hell. That was a good rib. And then I think we went again either like Saturday or Sunday. I forget which. The first 2 nights were awesome. The third night, it was stinky where we were sitting at. Like there was a foul odor. And so like I didn't like it that time, so we just like left. But I think that night we were in and out of no less than 6 to 7 different strip clubs down there because they were all like it had to be Sunday because like there was no cover for any of them, which is really cool, like because I mean you go to like in Atlantic City, I mean if you want to like club hop, it's going to cost you $15 to $20 just to get in the door most of the time.
Right.
So for here, if you just want to like hop from place to place to place and get like a feel for the scene, I guess, or like the quality of woman down there, the quality of entertaining woman, or whatever the hell, whatever you do down there, it's a lot less costly. So,
I do gotta say, there's few things on this earth I hate more than a cover charge.
oh, cover charges are worthless. I mean, not worthless, but like they're offensive to me. Like I haven't paid cover to get into like any nightclub in Atlantic City in God knows how long. I don't know. But like, you can't really get around it at the gentlemen's club because they just don't care.
Right.
Like, they don't have like promoters and people you know and this, that, and the other. Some of them do, and I typically go to those. Like my friends manage and stuff like that, so I tend to stay in those places.
It's like
when I do go.
I did a bar crawl in DC about a month ago for a friend's birthday, and one place had like a $10 cover charge, I think, or something. And it's like I could turn my head and see six bars without cover, and turn my head the other way and see about seven or eight more bars with no cover. Like,
yeah,
what's
like
the point?
Exactly. Like it, unless that cover charge comes with like a drink ticket or something,
right?
Then at least it has some sort of intrinsic value to it, not just like, here, please let me pay to get inside of your establishment. I would really enjoy to do that. No, I really don't. Like, I'd much rather, you know, buy a couple beers and with that money.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to go to a place that doesn't have it and just stay there. And I guess that is the kind of the incentive of a cover charge, because you're like, well, I paid to get in here, I might as well stay here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a rib.
It is.
The ultimate rib.
Fuck them.
That's right. Well, I guess we should go back to the beginning and talk about how you first got into the world of pro wrestling. As a fan, that is.
I basically worked my way in. Growing up, like, I was always a super huge wrestling fan since I was 8.5 years old, since when I first discovered it by accident after an episode of American Gladiators on my local Fox affiliate. The first episode of WWF Superstars I watched, I was immediately hooked. Then I was seeking everything out. And then eventually, by way of the Afterbags, like, and the internet, I started following independent wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha. I was like a sponge. So naturally, when it came time for me to, you know, be able to go to shows, I was at like every freaking show. Like, I'm sure you could go back to old Chikara, CZW, Ring of Honor events and look for the kid in a backwards hat wearing a book bag and either a Chris Hero or a blackout t-shirt. That was me. So I was like freaking everything that I could get myself to. Eventually, there was a very small independent show that I found out it was their first show that was taking place about 25 minutes away from my house. So naturally, I had to go. This was, of course, the original incarnation of Force One Pro Wrestling, which was in May of 2007. So I go to their first show, and it was like, you know, a small Southern New Jersey indie. And that's the most polite thing I could say about it. But it was good for what it was. I had a good time, you know, cheering the goodies and booing the baddies and, you know, seeing some of the guys there that had raw talent. And I was like, you know, this is a place to keep my eye on. Like, you know, why not? The day after the show, one of the, I guess, office guys was there. His name is John Solo. He was, now he does a lot of gimmick sales. He has like gimmick tables at a bunch of independent shows. But at the time, I guess he was doing like broadcasting, and he later on moved to become the ring announcer before I took over for him once he eventually left the company. But that's all later. At this specific day, this guy was at the restaurant that I was working at the time. And he was actually my guest, and he was, going over the results of the show with his kids while he was putting the results online, using our Wi-Fi connection. So naturally, this was mostly for me to procure myself a better gratuity. I approached the table like, hey, I was at that show too. You know, and, you know, we start talking, how'd you like it, this, that, and the other. Are you in the business? Are you interested? And, you know, I just told him I was a fan, but I was always interested in, you know, doing play-by-play one day. Because I was never really one of the kids that wanted to be a wrestler when I grew up. I was always small. So I always wanted, and I always knew the most out of all my friends as far as history, move names, title histories, you know, wrestling history. That was always my forte. So I always wanted to be a broadcaster so I could put my knowledge to use. So that was always like a dream of mine. And, you know, I told him that, and he was like, "Oh, you should come to this school." Now, me being the know-it-all 20-year-old at the time, I was like, "Well, if I'm going to go to a wrestling school, I would much rather go to a place that is quote unquote more reputable, like a Ring of Honor Academy, a CZW training academy, Chikara Wrestle Factory, something like that." That was what I was thinking at the time, and I was like, "Oh, I don't want to waste my time with this South Jersey indie, whatever." So this charade basically goes on for about a year and a half of him coming into the restaurant and us shooting the shit about independent wrestling, and him continually telling me to come down to the school. Eventually, it becomes November of 2008, and I show up to a show, and he goes, "Hey," it was like 5 minutes before bell time. There was this storm. It was really shitty weather, so like I was running late. So I get inside, and he's like, "Hey, I didn't think you were gonna make it." I was like, "No, I'm here." He's like, "Well, that's good because, hey, I have a question for you." He's like, "Are you still interested in doing color commentary or play by play or whatever the hell?" And I go, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, good. I have you on match number four."
Wow.
Like, what? He's like, "Yeah, I told the promoter you know a lot about Breaker Morant, who was a South Jersey, Philadelphia, Delaware area, independent wrestling stalwart. You know, he was all over the place at, you know, from the late 90s into the 2000s. And he's still around today, just, you know, not as prevalent, I would suppose." And he says, "Yeah, I told him you know a lot about Breaker Morant." And I tell him, like, "Yeah, man, I know a lot about Breaker Morant." But in my head, I'm thinking, "I don't know shit about Breaker Morant. Like, what the fuck?" But I'm playing it off. And that footage or that show that I own on DVD is probably one of the worst commentated matches that I have ever heard. Like, I was so bad because I guess I was nervous or whatever, but I didn't have that. I didn't have the voice or the confidence that I have now. It was more so me just sitting there and kind of talking like this about what was going on, and it wasn't really entertaining or exciting to listen to at all. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like I was just droning on, monotonous, and I wasn't, I didn't know what to do. You know, when it's easy to sit at home and say like, "Oh, I could do this and I can do that." Because, you know, you listen to the commentary or you watch the referee or you watch the wrestlers and you think like, "Oh, you know, why don't they do it this way, or I could do this better." But until you're actually like in the position doing it for the first time, you're like, "Man, this shit is hard. Like, what do I talk about? What do I say? How do I say it?" But luckily, since then, I've s from that show, naturally, I was like, "Man, this was fun. Tell me more about this school." And then from there, I was at the Force One Training Academy dojo or whatever the hell we called it every Tuesday and Thursday for about the next 2 to 3 years. Like, I hardly missed a day. And so that's kind of like how I got in. Just by that guy s realizing that I wanted to do it. And with I guess without John Solo, like, I would not be in this business. So I kind of owe it to him, you know. And then from there, going to like see I would just like go to CZW shows, and I befriended some of the guys. It was like Jimmy Clydesdale, the referee that a referee slash manager that we had at Force One, that would give me his one comp back in the day, you would get like each person on the show would get like one person that they could like get in for free. And I became that guy for him. So I started, you know, coming in through the back door of the arena, through the locker room. I started meeting the guys and networking. And then I just kind of like, it just became a thing where I would be able to like come in through the back. And eventually, I was able to work for the company, you know, doing like small jobs, like setting up chairs and putting out flyers, picking up people from the airport. And then eventually got to, you know, timing matches, working on the online results, doing write-ups of shows. And then DJ then put me in front of the camera doing backstage interviewer, a few episodes of their CZW Wired internet show. And then eventually I got to the spot to do commentary and then ring announcing. And, you know, it just wherever he needed me, and still wherever he needs me to this day, like I am more than happy to facilitate my services in whatever way he sees fit.
So when you were going to school for this, was the purpose to get better at commentary? And if so, what would you be doing every time you went to one of the weekly sessions you were attending?
Most of the time I didn't actually work on owning my craft there because the facilities weren't there. They didn't have, I'm not very like technologically savvy. Like I can get by, but when it comes to like, you know, ripping matches off of a DVD without commentary and putting my own and getting it recorded on there, none of us really knew how to do that. So like sometimes like we would sit there and do commentary over a match. But there was no way for us to like save it and listen back to it. So like, you know, like I got like instant feedback, but I wasn't able to like study it. You know what I mean? So I did do some of that, but what they also had me, practice, managerial work a little bit. They had me do referee work a little bit. They had me do, interviewing stuff. But luckily when I first started, I'm not saying in any way, shape or form that like I was always good, because, you know, we can go back a few minutes ago. I'll tell you, like, my first match was just the drizzling shits as far as I'm concerned. But they liked what I was doing. They liked the style that like I kind of like came up with, through my first few sessions there. So a lot of my practice that I did commentary wise was at home. While I was there, I was more so, working on like, learning how to do referee stuff so I could like ref the practice matches at the school. Learning how to like take bump, like basic bumps and stuff like that, just in case, you know, I needed to be used in that kind of, way. And then a lot of my time was spent there, creatively, because, people knew, like the people there knew that, I had access to a lot of footage. I was very knowledgeable. So I would always be like bouncing ideas off of guys like, hey, why don't you try this? Like, I saw this move the other day and it made me think of like one of your matches, like maybe you can try to work on this. And a lot of it was, just us like, and I'm very grateful that, the guys at Force One, welcomed me in that way, because I know a lot of places would not just let a kid in and start like offering up suggestions and this, that, and the other. But we all bonded so quickly, me and all the people that were there, that it was open, and they were open to it, and they appreciated it. I think that, I thought so much of them that I would, you know, see stuff and be reminded of them and offer them suggestions. And you know, offer them, you know, different little sequences and ideas and just things that I was thinking of for them specifically. And, you know, it was like a giant group of friends hanging out like every Tuesday and Thursday. Just some of them wrestled and I watched them work on stuff. And, it was like more so like a constructive criticism thing that I was there for, sort of like.
I think that, I mean, that's pretty cool that, and I'm sure they appreciated that you would come to them with things that you had seen or ideas specifically for that person in mind. And I think it speaks a lot about you too, that you were, relatively speaking, you know, you weren't a wrestler, you weren't really in anybody in wrestling, but they had the respect for you that they knew you were such a fan and respected the business so much that when mm-hmm. you would come to them with these ideas and advice and things of that nature, you knew you had only good intentions behind it. And there actually was something behind what you were saying too.
Absolutely.
It's really easy to dismiss someone in the position that you were in at that time, as easy as it was to take the advice and put it to use. So I think that's pretty awesome. That's what they did.
Yeah. See, I think the thing that got me over, with them was, this was when Tommy Cairo was still running Force One, and he was there one day, and you know, he was there like the first or second time I was there, and he was like, oh, you know, who are you and blah blah blah. So you know, we were talking and he started talking about his like stuff from ECW in Japan, stuff that I've seen. So I was like, oh, stuff that I have too, that I own. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen that, I have that. And he was like, oh really, like could you bring something in? So I was like, yeah, sure. The next day, the next practice session, I show up with one of my heavy duty cases that holds like, it has like 600, it has spots for 600 DVDs. So I just like show up with that, and it's just full of just like all kinds of stuff. And Cairo was, he was like losing his mind for it. He's like, I can't believe you have stuff from the '70s and Japan and this, that, and the other. So like he was really souped up about that. And then he went and got one of his like picture albums, 'cause he knows that I was like a student of the game, I guess. And he was going to show me his old pictures, which I would be into. So of course, in the beginning of this album is, our photos from one of his shows that he promoted in 99, 2000, 2001 in Atlantic City that was called Outlaws of Wrestling. So I'm like, yeah, this is cool. So he turns the page, on the second page, dead center in one of the photos is me, is a 13-year-old MLJ at his show, dead center in the picture. I'm like, hey, Cairo, nice picture of me. And that just set him over the top, because he's like, man, like, who are you? Where have you been? Like, you know, and like, I think that little interaction right there was like, made them realize like, man, this kid has like, he's been a fan of this stuff for so long. He's got all this footage. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And those two interactions right there, I believe, are kind of what got me so well acclimated within that organization and that group of people.
That's awesome. I mean, that's really just the connecting thing, is that at the end of the day, we're all wrestling fans.
Absolutely.
If you can just sit down and talk wrestling, you're in the family. It's really like, it's a lot like punk rock. Like, if you like pro wrestling, you get it and you're part of the family. And if you're not, well, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to ask, do you remember the first wrestling match or show that you saw?
It was the episode of WWF Superstars the day before King of the Ring 1995. I can't tell you anything about that show, honestly. Like, it was like your standard like squash match show. I'm sure guys like John Crystal and Gus Kantarakis were squashed that day. But I will tell you the two somewhat embarrassing things that I thought of wrestling the first time I saw it. Number one, based on his promo pick for the upcoming the Kiss My Foot match the next day with Bret Hart, I thought Jerry the King Lawler, they called him the King. I thought he was an astronaut. I thought that was his gimmick.
What?
Because of the way he was holding his crown. It looked like the way that a NASA astronaut would hold their space helmet. I was eight. I was stupid.
Okay, fair enough.
But I thought Jerry Lawler was an astronaut. Number two, I thought Yokozuna was legitimately fake. Like, I had never seen a person that large before in my life, and I was like, there is no way that is an actual human. I thought it was a dude in a fat suit or something. I could not believe that Yokozuna was a real life person. So those were like my first two ideas of pro wrestling. And you know what? How awesome are those two ideas?
I mean, I don't know if I can necessarily blame you for the second one. I mean, Yokozuna was always big, but I mean, that was the period in like that in 96 when he got just out of control big.
Yeah, yeah.
So I, you know what? I'm kind of surprised I didn't think he was a fake person.
Yeah, I thought he was 100% not real. And then shortly thereafter, I guess like a week or two later, I remember hiding the fact that I liked wrestling from my parents. And this whole thing between of me not watching wrestling and keeping it for my parents is because they always showed the parental discretion, do not try this at home thing before Saturday Morning Superstars. So I thought that it was a bad thing to watch for a child, you know, like I was like a goody two shoes. I thought it was bad. So I didn't want to be involved with something bad, I guess. But then, like, I just couldn't help it. I remember watching, like, the next episode of Monday Night Raw, or, like, the 2 days after or a week after or whatever it was, with my door shut to my bedroom. And I never did that. My door was always open. Not because it had to be or anything like that. Like, I don't have strict parents, but I felt that I had to hide it because, like, I thought I would get in trouble or something like that. I don't know. But then, like, my old man, like, popped his head in the door. He's like, oh, you're watching wrestling. Me and your mom used to watch that all the time. And then I remember I got so hot at my dad in my head thinking, why didn't you tell me about this freaking great entertaining thing? Why did you keep it from me? I got so hot. Like...
Was he not watching it then anymore?
No, they used to watch the 605 NWA show on TBS.
Right.
Back, I guess, when I remember my parents telling me that they would rush home. Yeah, they would rush home from Lamaze class to catch the 605 show. So they were, and you know, good for them, because they were watching NWA, the major leagues of professional wrestling. They weren't watching that cartoony stuff that Titan was doing. No, I mean, it was all awesome back then. Wrestling is awesome no matter what it is. I don't care. But I get, you know, and then once they discovered that I was like super into it, like, I discovered WCW on my own. Because I think I looked in the TV guide just for anything wrestling. I saw, like, WCW Pro or Worldwide or whatever the hell it was. I remember being really upset in 1995 for our market not having WGTW 48, which showed, like, all of the syndicated shows, like Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And it showed ECW, it showed WWF Challenge, I want to say, and like a couple like independent groups. It was in our TV guide, but we didn't get the channel. And I remember being super hot at TV guide for that too. Ugh.
That's rough.
And then like 2 weeks later, so we're looking at like mid-July 95, mid to late July 95, there was another syndicated channel, WWAC TV 53, out of Atlantic City. I think it was TV 53. I can't quite recall. Based out of Atlantic City. And they showed ECW at like, I don't know, freaking in sometime in the afternoon, like 12 noon or 1 o'clock. And my dad, I guess, saw it when he was flipping channels, and he calls me up because we had like two phone lines in the house for whatever reason. And so he calls the other line. And he tells me, oh, turn on whatever channel there's wrestling on. And like the first thing I see is Mikey Whipwreck getting caned by Sandman and Marty Jannetty coming to save him. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, this is not what I'm used to. Because, you know, on WWF, you would see like Techno Team 2000 and Aldo Montoya, and on ECW, little Mikey Whipwreck is getting his shit kicked at him with a cane with a beer drinking dude in Zubas. Like,
it sounds like pretty similar programs.
They are almost 100% the same. it was so unlike anything I had seen as a young wrestling fan. That like, so of course I was watching that. I was watching anything wrestling, like IWCCW on syndication, out of, New England, that was showing reruns from 91, like the same freaking, Tony Atlas and Vic Steamboat matches that kept happening and happening and happening, or Greg Valentine, like, they would just get replayed every week, and I loved it. Anything wrestling I could get my hands on, it was being watched by me.
What was the first live show you went to? Because I think about it, King of the Ring 95, what, that was in Philly, wasn't it?
It was in Philly, but, I mean, it was, like, way too quick for me to say, like, hey, I discovered wrestling. Now take me to Philly and buy me tickets to this pay-per-view.
That was my thought. I was like, that's way too quick of a turnaround from when you became a fan to go to a live show.
My first live show was January 1996 in the Philadelphia Spectrum. The main event was Brett and Diesel in a cage.
I remember that round of house shows. They were doing that match, it seemed, pretty often around those times.
Yeah, it was a good time. I think we were like sixth row on the floor too, which was awesome for, you know, a 9-year-old. The month before in the Poconos, WWF had done a fan fest the weekend of In Your House 5, and there were making appearances were 1-2-3 Kid, Fat 2, Mr. Perfect, Savio Vega, Henry Godwin, Doc Hendricks, Duke the Dumpster Drozzi. So,
did you,
like,
just know all those off the top of your head?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous, but continue.
Yeah, that's sort of like my wrestling mind.
I like it.
It's really disgusting. But we were there that whole weekend with the guys were staying at Caesars. Had this like it was owned by the Caesars company, and it was the Brookdale Resort in the Poconos, and it was like, I guess, like a ski lodge or something like that. But WWF had taken over. And it was really cool. Like, they had like a WWF, the arcade game tournament challenge. They had like a question and answer session. They had like an autograph signing. They had a dinner with the stars. The hotel information channel turned into like a basically a primitive version of the WWE network. It was just pay-per-views on loop. Like I remember watching, I remember sitting in a jacuzzi, putting the TV into the bathroom and watching WrestleMania 11 on the hotel information channel. That was like, it was awesome.
If that's not the life, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, dude. Like, I had just turned 9. I'm sitting in a jacuzzi watching WrestleMania 11 at some sort of fancy ski lodge. The cool thing about that, another cool thing about that trip is, we're in the hotel lobby, standing around like, oh, I went with my mom, my dad, and separately, we had taken separate cars, was my aunt and uncle and my cousin, who was 3 months younger than me. So he's basically like my brother, at that time, like we grew up together. He lives like 15 minutes away, 3 months apart. So like, super close. We were both there and we were kind of like, oh, what's this going to be like? And then all of a sudden we look up and here comes, Doc Hendricks walking into the lobby and we're like starstruck. We're like, oh my God, it's Doc Hendricks. It was the first, wrestling, personality that we ever met in person. And, I remember, running up to him, like, and I said, oh, Doc Hendricks. He's like, and then he's like, hey, what's your name, kid, or whatever. And at this point in time, when I was a kid, I was going by EJ because, my dad shares the same name. So he was Emil and I was EJ. Now that I've grown up, I'm Emil now. Cause that's just how that kind of shit works. So I introduced myself to him, and then the last event of the weekend was this raffle for there were like 3 separate prizes, and they pulled a ticket for one of the prizes, which was for complimentary tickets to a WWF show, 1 year free subscription to WWF magazine, and a WWF track jacket. He pulled my ticket and I won, and I walk up to the stage and Doc Hendricks, I shit you not, says, congratulations, EJ. And I lost my mind. I lost my freaking mind because Doc Hendricks knew my name and I it was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Do you still have this track jacket?
The track jacket got stolen from me at the playground.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I was very stupid. I want to say 4 to 5 years later, I had worn the jacket and I brought my Walkman with me to the playground. And I had this, I went to this playground like 2 blocks away from my house, like every day. I had this like cubby spot that like I thought nobody knew about, that I would like just like hide stuff in, like, that I brought with me. Like if I brought like a snack with me or whatever, I would hide it and it would always stay there and would always be there whenever I came back. But not this time. My jacket and my Walkman were gone when I went back to go get them.
Oh, that blows.
Yeah. Like, and it wasn't like I left it there for a long time either. I think it was like a half hour. I was like super pissed. I was like devastated. And that 1 year WWF magazine subscription wound up lasting approximately 14 years. I never paid for it.
That's rules.
Yeah, it was awesome. So,
kick ass.
Yeah.
I wonder how they just let that go. Or what? Because you say 14 years, like, how do they eventually just realize, we should probably stop this?
I don't know. One day I just like didn't get it. And it's not like I was reading them either. Like they would just like come to the house and I would just like, oh, here's WWF magazine, whatever. Like I still have like a bunch of them like still in like the mailer plastic wrap or whatever. Like the little baggies or whatever that they come in.
The trading cards in the middle still intact.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. This was more like that's more so in like 08, 09, and 2010, like that I wasn't paying attention to them. But like when I was a kid, like hell yeah, man, I was reading those things. Those things are awesome. Like I got basically like every magazine that I could think of. Like I got the Apter bags, like all three of the big three, Inside Wrestling, The Wrestler, and of course Pro Wrestling Illustrated every month. Sometimes I got, what the fuck was the other one called? It had America in it. the Wrestle America, I think it was.
All right.
Something like that. But yeah, I got all of those. I had a subscription to PWI Weekly when I was in like 97. Like, I was like that kid in school that when like a kid would ask me about wrestling, instead of talking about like Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels, I would be like, hey, Ultimo Dragon and Yuji Nagata had an awesome match on Nitro last night. Like, I was that kid.
They'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about the Blues Brothers instead.
Yeah, Jacob, or is that Eli? Like, which one is the which Blue Brothers which? Like, I don't freaking know. But yeah, like the kids, like, but like, and then especially when wrestling got like popular in like 98, 99, like I was the most popular kid in school because everybody wanted to know about it and they knew that I had been into it. So like, everybody was coming up to me like, who's this guy? Who's that guy? What do they do? Where have they been? You know, whatever. And, you know, kids would be like, hey, is it true that Goldberg used to be the Warlord? I'm like, hell no, you guys are stupid. Like, tell your older cousin, whoever told you that, they're stupid as shit. Like, like all those like stupid rumors. Oh, like how many Undertakers have there been? And like, of course, like, and this, of course, is, like, so sad, like, the timing of it, but, like the whole Ultimate Warrior thing that just happened.
Yeah,
like, there were kids, like, in grade school that thought that, like, Ultimate Warrior died, like, 20 years ago, you know? And
right,
like,
the whole WrestleMania 8 thing made everybody think that they just switched him with some new guy.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, did you know that the original Ultimate Warrior died and he got replaced by like another guy. And I always had to be like, no, you're wrong. Stop it. I guess they thought it was like Kerry Von Erich, or I guess they bought into the whole Renegade thing or whatever rumor mill that they heard it from. But like now considering the timing is what it is. Like I can't joke about that now.
Right.
Like, because like, but that was a real life thing back then. Like, kids thought that there were multiple warriors.
I definitely heard it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And even like, as an adult, I remember people like talking about it. And I was like, do people really still think this? Like, it's bizarre.
It's one of those things that like every kid knew or like thought at the time. And they swore to it. It's sort of like the nude Sonya Blade Mortal Kombat 3 code.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did every kid in the country know about that fake thing? You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like how is that widespread? I don't understand it. I don't understand how that shit works. But touching on the Ultimate Warrior real quick, my second show was a house show in Philadelphia in May of 96. I had homemade tassels. And I painted my face up like my mom painted my face like I was the Ultimate Warrior. Me and my cousin, we both had tassels and painted faces. We were little warriors that day. And, you know, not just that day, but, you know, we were big time Ultimate Warrior fans. Like, he was one of my favorites. So.
Oh, yeah. Like, when I was a kid, the first pay per view I was ever able to get, it was King of the Ring 96, because my birthday's in June. My dad, as a birthday gift, allowed me to order any pay per view. And since I'm a little kid and I was impatient, and I also really liked the King of the Ring, I just got that one. And I know everyone remembers the 96 King of the Ring for the Austin speech and all that. But as a kid, I really liked the Ultimate Warrior Jerry the King Lawler story they had building up to that, where we called him a con artist, and Jerry Lawler smashed the painting over his head. And
yeah,
obviously, it felt like it had been forever since I had seen the Warrior, since I had only really seen him on the old Coliseum video. So I remember being just super hyped for that match, and it being the first pay-per-view I was able to order. So yeah, that was awesome. But it's got to be weird for you, because you were at that Raw the night after Mania 30, where he came out, gave his speech, and then, you know, 24 hours later, like, you get that news that he had passed, and everyone's just like, he was just on TV yesterday. Yeah. Like, how could this have happened?
And the worst part about it is while being at that Raw and when he cut that promo, I was like, what was the point of that? Like,
yeah,
I was thinking, I literally said to like my friends who I was there with, I was like, man, that promo sucked. Like, what was the fucking point? It was worthless. Like, and I totally downplayed the importance of it, or the meaning behind it, I guess. Like, because I'm like, ah, Ultimate Warrior's just talking about like his regular like Ultimate Warrior stuff. But then like you go back, you read the words, and it's like, man, like, I was a prick, you know, like, that was like his like goodbye to the world, you know, and I just shit on it.
Like, well, like, you didn't know.
I didn't know, like, but it, I still feel like bad about it. Like, I'm not happy that like I thought that way about it, considering what happened just 24 hours later.
Right. And like, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist or anything, but like, you know, there's a lot of studies that show out there that people basically live longer if they have something to live for. Like, that's what you hear about. There's people don't often die the month before their birthday, or that death rates are down in years when there's like a presidential election, things of that nature. And it's
like
your mate is amends. He got in the Hall of Fame. He got to come out and bask in the glow of the crowd one more time. And then he's gone. And it's like, this is, it's so crazy that this all just happened and then he passed. But it's almost like he got all this stuff done and then it was like, he could go. It's weird to say, but, you know.
Well, not just that, but his DVD just came out that Tuesday, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's like DVD release, Hall of Fame, WrestleMania appearance, Raw promo. That, what?
I know.
Like, all within a week. It's, and that's, like, it's so crazy to wrap your head around. Like, man, like, it's, like unbelievable. I remember last night, you know, because, like, when I came back from the airport and everything, like, I was totally bush. I think I passed out at, like, 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I didn't wake up until 1:30 in the morning. And I had, like, 4 texts just saying, like, fuck, did you hear? Or whatever. I'm like, man, what? Because the last time I got texted that somebody had passed, like, it was actually Larry Sweeney, I believe.
Oh, man.
Yeah, my good friend texted me, like, and so I thought it was like somebody like I knew, because I used to trade DVDs with Sweeney. Like whenever I saw him at shows or whatever, we would always talk about old Portland wrestling, and I would like bring him DVDs all the time, and like, you know, he was always super cool to me. But that was like the last time I got like a serious text message, like, shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like worried. I was like, man, I was like, what the it was like a, like, what the fuck? Like, I just saw him, you know? So, like, it was crazy. And then, like, the whole rest of the night, I watched my Ultimate Warrior DVD set, which I really like.
So, the new one looks great. I actually almost pulled the trigger on buying it yesterday, but I decided, like, you know, it's too early.
Oh, it's a great set. A lot of really good matches on there. And the interview snippets that they have with him, like the lead ins to some segments and matches and whatever, like taking his story of going through his career is really neat. It's cool to get his ideas or like his thoughts on his character, his career. I'm only halfway through it. But it's great. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, Warrior's one of those guys who doesn't go out and talk very often, especially not about wrestling. So
yeah.
To have a DVD set where he talks, it's not like you're getting a bunch of recycled stuff that you've heard over and over again. Like, he's not one of those guys that you hear on all the podcasts that all the wrestlers have now or anything.
Yeah.
It's so it's really unique to be able to finally get him to sit down and tell his side of the story on a lot of this stuff. And You know, I know this isn't an original thought, but man, that Mania 7 retirement match with Savage is damn near perfect.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, just from, like, the opening second of him not running to the ring.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect storytelling right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that one part just, I don't know. Like, it's such an awesome match. There's a lot of really good ones on that set.
Yeah. It is kind of sad thing about that Mania 7 match and realizing all the participants are gone, managers included.
Who was the ref?
Earl Hebner, so he's still around.
Oh,
but Monsoon was on commentary and he's not around.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really a bummer, man. Like, especially going back and watching an old Rumble and you just see how many guys are gone. It's just, I guess, just the nature of the business, especially with guys from that era.
Yeah.
The thing that sucked for me the most is, like, when we first heard the news about Warriors, all I could think about was watching the Hall of Fame Saturday and seeing his wife crying and how proud she was of her husband and his two daughters just smiling. And I'm like, and how they lost their dad. Like, nothing is more sad than that.
Yeah, I'm happy that I haven't seen the Hall of Fame yet, because, of course, I was at WrestleCon. I'm sure if I had seen the Hall of Fame, I would feel the same exact way as you and a lot of other folks do. I just haven't gotten around to watching the Hall of Fame yet. So
yeah, it's definitely worth your time whenever you get a chance, but I completely understand, like, with it being such a fresh wound, that you wouldn't want to go and do that to yourself just yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that and Mr. T's bizarre speech are certainly.
And I heard Jake Roberts was really good.
Jake was awesome. I really liked Hall's. Paul Bearer's was short and incredibly sweet. Like, man, Kane's induction of him was really fantastic. Like, that guy can talk. He's great.
Awesome.
So yeah, definitely worth the time when you get a chance. But it's got a little bit of a depressing topic. So let's switch gears to something.
Sure.
Like I said at the beginning of the top of the show, you're a part of Team Best Dude.
Yeah, love those guys.
Yeah, so a gimmick I did with I think it might have been Mike, it might have been somebody else. So I had people kind of run through the Team Best Dude guys, kind of tell a story about how you met all those jokers. So
yeah, I think it was Mike. Yeah, I listened to that one.
Mm-hmm. So if you please, I can go through the names, or if you just want to take it, I'll leave it to you.
Go ahead.
All right, let's start with Mikey King.
Mike E. King, met him. I've known him for like 7 years at this point, going to like CZW shows. I actually met him like through his dad, who I met by making fun of at a wrestling show as he was walking past. And I said, you know, look at this goon or whatever. I made fun of him for looking like what I believed was a typical Philadelphian. Which I was using my New Jersey-based stereotype for what I considered Philadelphia people to be like. I don't know. But, he I guess he heard it and he turned around. And he was like, what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. I'm not even from Philly. I'm like, oh, well, Philadelphia people suck anyway. We both shared a laugh and it was okay. And then I saw him, a couple months, he was at all the shows too. And when it came time that, the guy that I was going to shows with, my hometown best friend, Mook, he stopped going to shows. So I needed like somebody to sit with. And I was like, hey, where are you guys sitting? And then, there was all of us at the north side of the, New Alhambra, Viking Hall, CCW Arena, Asylum Arena, whatever you would like to call it. And so, of course, since it was like a bunch of like older people and like a bunch of younger people, me being like, I don't know, like 19 or 20 or, I was like, yeah, 20, like I was like at the kids table, basically, you know what I mean? Like with, all the younger citizens of that section.
All right, well, let's talk about Nick Manoa.
Let's talk about pro wrestling's BFF. What an awesome guy he is.
Yeah, great dude.
I've been trying to think, like, I didn't formally meet him in person until last month. or a few weeks ago for that for Mikey King's birthday slash on point trip. Like,
yeah,
that was the first time I met him in person.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Same thing goes with Reed Bentley. But I don't know. I know we were talking online like before, like best dude was a thing. I don't remember what it was that, like, because I think, like, I remember, like, we would be like tweeting during like Raw and like Catfish and stuff, like, you know, we'd be like putting each other's jokes over and stuff, like, but I don't know like what the catalyst was to. I'm gonna have to ask him if he remembers. But I just, like, it was just like one of those, like, so, like, this guy's a notable in wrestling in that region, and I'm a wrestling person up here, so like it was only like natural that we started like talking to each other. He's a cool dude. Nothing but love for him, and nothing but love for him and his. They just moved into a new apartment, so freaking good for them. They're quality, top notch people.
And that night we all hung out, did rule.
Yeah, man, totally awesome. That was such a good. I wish he would have came out to the Lulu Cafe Lulu or whatever the hell.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Did a lot of karaoke and drinking. It was a good time.
Yeah, some dudes bought me drinks because they thought I had drugs.
It was you and Bentley, right? Who went out to get the drinks?
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, we're gonna buy whatever they want. Okay, so they either thought like that I had drugs, or they wanted to like suck my dick or something, or they wanted to do drugs and suck my dick. I don't know. Like,
I was about to say, can it be both?
Yeah, hey man, we can do it all. You can snort a line of blow off if you want. Like,
you know, in hindsight, you really should have taken better advantage of that free drink thing. Just be like, fine, a round for the room.
Yeah, you're right.
It's all right, though. It's okay.
Yeah, we were all pretty good at that point. So, yeah.
So what about Reed Bentley? How'd you meet him?
I met him through Manawa. Just because, like, him and Bentley and Manawa are, like, friends. And so, like, and like they have like their podcast together, and like Manawa would just like bring up Bentley's name, like we just like got introduced to him, like I guess like it was a mutual friend thing, like, oh hey, like we both like this same guy Nick, so let's talk or whatever. It was like nothing really outstanding. It was just like oh hey, cool with each other, so let's be cool with, we're both cool with the same person, so let's be cool with each other, one of those kind of deals.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So you basically met Manawa and Bentley together, and it's easy to group them together. Would that be the same with Stutzy and Statmark?
No, actually, Stutzy, I started talking to a few years ago. When I had posted a, I did a project where I wanted to analyze, this sounds like the nerdiest shit ever, but I wanted to analyze all of Rey Mysterio's televised matches from March of 1999.
That is so specific.
It is, because he had such a good month.
That's right after he unmasked, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was such a good month. He had matches with Bam Bam Bigelow. That was awesome. The Kevin Nash match, the tag match with Kidman against freaking Benoit and Malenko, I think it was. He had a series of really good matches. And so I was like, man, I'm gonna write about these. And like my reviewing style is very I paint a picture with my review style. It's not like, oh, this guy did this, and then he did this, and then he did this, and then that guy did that. Like, that is boring. Like, if I want to know that, like, I will watch the match.
Right.
Like, I don't get anything from that. I like reviews that are like more into like that don't necessarily tell you everything that happens in a match, but more so talk about the match itself. And, you know, like, I don't know, like maybe I'll post one of my reviews on teambestdude.com and people can hear that for them or read for themselves. And like my kind of style. But I posted that on the Death Valley Driver video review message board, and Stutzy actually like replied to it, and he's like, "Man, review style, it brings it to life. Your writing style really brings the matches to life." So, I thought it was really cool that he like reached out to me and gave me positive feedback. I didn't know who he was, you know, he was just a guy. And then, like, I found out that he was, like, involved in the business and this, that, and the other. I added him on Facebook, and then we talked on there for a little bit. And I was like, hey, I started writing reviews for this blog site I had. ProWrestLove.blogspot.com is what I used to write on. And I haven't written on it in, like, 3 years, but... It was awesome. I hit him up. I was like, hey, I started writing these reviews. Like, I remember you liked my stuff from Death Valley Driver back in the day. So like, here's a link. And then, we started talking and we talk a lot. We talk really, really, really regularly. And we see each other at, every WrestleMania all the time. And, he's just a really good dude, a solid, super solid mind for the business, and a real fun guy to talk to and hang out with. So that's as far as Grant goes. I met him, of course, through Stutz. I can't exactly remember when it was, but I've known him for a couple years now, and he's a cool guy. Loves his Packers football. Loves his pro wrestling. And he's a really cool dude. I can't say enough about the entire CWF Mid-Atlantic crew. Like, they are all so good at what they do. They're passionate. They're appreciative. They're kind. They're welcoming. And Grant is all of those things. He's also got a super mind for the business. Lots of cool stuff that the stuff that he's a fan of is very much similar to the stuff that I'm a fan of. So like it's very easy for us to have a conversation about wrestling or whatever. So it's just another super solid guy.
And I think that leaves Lowercase Dan, a guy I've never met but follow on Twitter because y'all have said to. And that's as gold to me.
Dan is freaking great. One of the funniest guys I know. Like, he'll just, like, come off with some, like we'll just be talking. He'll come out with these, like, these freaking one-liners that just, like, body me. And on him for approximately the same, I guess, around the same amount of time that I've known Mike, and just from going to like CZW shows and stuff like that, and like another guy to talk to every day, he says that he's coming to San Francisco next year for Mania, so I think next year will be the first time that like all of the Team Best Dude collective will be at WrestleMania week together. So I am super excited for that. Like, I'm already looking forward to next year's WrestleMania just for the sheer fact I'm going to be hanging out with some really cool people in a place I've never been before. And wrestling makes that possible. So
Yeah, Santa Clara is awesome. I was actually born right outside of there, and
Oh,
I've only been back once, but I really just love the Bay Area down there. So I think I'm definitely planning on going for that reason. I think we're all gonna have a blast. No
yeah,
question about it.
I really like the feel from there. Like I really like the specific genre of hip hop music that comes from the Bay Area. Like E40 is like awesome to me. So I really like I I'm going to enjoy myself a lot being in that area. So
You know, I got to hear some of your freestyling when we were doing the karaoke thing. Have you ever had any serious consideration in doing some stuff with your rapping, your hip hop?
no, not really. I've like recorded a track or two here and there. I've performed in front of live crowds in a few different places. I actually performed in Providence, Rhode Island, or was it Denver? It was like some kind of like open mic thing at a conference I was at, and my buddies were like, "Hey man, yeah, you totally have to like give the DJ your an instrumental and rap for everybody." And I'll tell you what, like that ballroom was full, like 500 to 600 people, and I just like rocked it for like a couple tracks worth. Like I never really did it as something like serious. It was just like a mental exercise for me. I like to play with words, so like I feel like I'm witty, so I feel like why not try to do something with it, you know, just as a hobby. And it's like a mental exercise, and I don't know if I'm any good or not, but whatever.
Well, if nothing else, you've been able to take your wit and love of words and turn that into the world of wrestling with your commentary and ring announcing and stuff. And where are you doing that now? I know you're doing it for CZW, but where else are you? Can people find you if they want to listen to your commentary or come say hey?
If they want to do either of those things, they can watch WSU, On Point Wrestling, BWO, which is Body Slam Wrestling Organization, has just started doing shows in South Jersey. They also run in North Jersey, but in the South Jersey part, it's like sort of it's like under the same umbrella, but kind of like a different company, sort of. So that is like a new startup. Also, I have Beyond coming up.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, their secret show, the day after Best of the Best, this weekend. I'll be doing ring announcing and some commentary for that. And those shows are really fun to be at because they're smaller. They're more, what's the word I'm looking for?
More intimate.
The more intimate, yes. You'd figure I'd know like that, right? They're more intimate and they're like more laid back. You know, I can show up and I don't have to dress in a suit. I can wear whatever I'm wearing and have a good time. And it's a fun thing. But those are my main groups at this time, and I'm always down to fill in other dates wherever I possibly can for any other organization. Which may pop up here and there. So I'm always on the lookout for something.
I guess I'll take us to the end of this. So, where can people find you on social media and all that jazz? Any other plugs you feel like throwing out there?
Any kind of social media there is, it's at Guapo MLJ. That is GUAPOEMILJ. That goes for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Skype, freaking Snapchat, Kick, freaking OK Cupid, I don't care. All of them.
Did you say
In
Instagram?
Instagram, yeah. All of them. Each one of them. It's the same thing. It makes it so much easier that way. I used to have like a different name for like some things, but then I realized, hey, that's kind of r silly. So let me just make it all one thing.
How
So
dare you?
make it all one thing. Hey man, I love Look What Kevin Ford Did. That's like my favorite freaking social media name ever. But
I did. That's the one thing I learned the weekend that you were in town.
yeah man, I freaking love that name. Like it's 'cause it's so like it makes so much sense. Like look what I did. Look what Kevin Ford did. Look at
There's,
this thing.
it's, it, I mean, it fits because I use it for both Tumblr and Instagram where it fits. Like those, I think too, is where it fits the most. But everything else, like Twitter, doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
There actually is a backstory to that name. We can get into that at another time. So.
Oh yeah, Tumblr too. Even though I never use Tumblr, Guapo MLJ. But hey, if I hear that you might want to send me some nudes or whatever, like I'll like go on there.
That's a shame, man. Because the other some of the other Team Best Dude guys, like Mikey King and Nick Manoa, their Tumblr game is on point.
Yeah, it is. I like the first night I used Tumblr, I got some girl to like take a topless picture, and I'm like, well, I think I'm done.
Yeah, you peaked. You peaked on the first night.
I peaked within 2 hours, so I'm done.
Well, there you go. Well, Hamill, I really appreciate you coming on, man. This is a blast, and just thanks for doing the show. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man, thank you so much, and anytime, man, no matter what the topic is, I am down to talk about anything. So thank you for having me.
You know, when I started the Fan to Fan podcast 30 episodes ago, I never would have suspected I was going to be talking about strip clubs and cover charges and things of that nature, but I guess that's what happens when you talk to a guy who just got back from a weekend of craziness in New Orleans. So thank you, MLJ, for being on big episode 30 of the Fan to Fan podcast. Be sure to follow him at MLJ on Twitter. And if you're listening to this on the Friday when this episode drops, be sure to check him out at CCW's Best of the Best 13 in Voorhees, New Jersey. And you can catch him on Sunday at Beyond Wrestling's Secret Show. And you can find more about that by tweeting at Beyond Wrestling and saying, yo, what's up with your secret show? And also be sure to follow at Team Best Dude on Twitter and everybody else involved in that group, like a Mikey King or Nick Manoa, who've been on the show in the past, and all the other guys involved with it, Lowercase Dan, Stutzy, Statmark, and of course, the Reed Bentley, a.k.a. Reed Barbecue Bentley. You can follow me on Twitter, too, at KFord13, and you're going to be either listening to this through Pro Wrestling Ponderings or WrestleFolks Podcast Network. Follow both of them on Twitter, at PW Ponderings and at WrestleFolks, respectively. Subscribe to both on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. For Pro Wrestling Ponderings, you would search for PWP Podcasts, and for WrestleFolks, search WrestleFolks. This episode comes out on Fridays on PWPonderings.com, but if you subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, it comes out a night early, so you can catch it on Thursday night just in time for work on Fridays, and is syndicated on WrestleFolks on Monday mornings. It may or may not be out by the time you listen to this, but myself, Matt Waters, and Justin Houston are going to be sitting down to do a podcast talking about WrestleMania 30, The Ultimate Warrior, and Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier. So if you're into any of those three things, I definitely recommend checking out that podcast. I also do a podcast called Flooping the Pig, which comes out on Mondays, where myself, Brad Garoon, and Justin Houston talk about Adventure Time. It has nothing to do with wrestling, but Adventure Time is a really fun cartoon show, and if you like that show, you're going to like our podcast. Also, if you like pro wrestling, check out pwponderings.com. News, reviews, podcasts, tons of stuff for independent wrestling fans. It's crazy if you're not checking it out, basically. And that's going to do it for this week. So thank you so much, everybody, for sticking around for 30 whole episodes of this podcast. I really do appreciate it. We'll be back next week with a new guest. But until then, thanks so much for listening, and thanks for being a fan.
I'm a boss-ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss-ass bitch, bitch, bitch. Bitch, 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 I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch.